let me in. Shiba shiba. I wanna be closer to you. Shiba shiba. Open up your soul. Shiba shiba. Let me find that part of you. The part that nobody ever knew.
Let me touch your.
Hello and welcome to Let Me Touch Your Mind, the show where we try to get you to be something, do something, experience something, enjoy something. And there's a lot to enjoy. San Francisco is blessed to have talented artists who are constantly creating new works for people to enjoy. One of those talented artists is here today. I'd like to welcome the lovely and talented Stan Stone. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being on the show. So, Stan, tell us a little bit about yourself. Like, what kind of work do you like to do?
So, I really like to do anything creative. I do a lot of writing and directing. I've written and directed for film as well as stage. And in 2020, I was published as a poet, my first book of poetry published, and is available on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been quite a journey.
When did you first discover that you really enjoyed the medium of writing as a form of artistic expression?
I began really writing when I joined a group of filmmakers called Bear Witness Films, and we wrote a lot of short films and based in improv, actually. So we'd write the theme for the film and a skeleton outline, and then we'd improvise each scene.
And how long ago was that? And what was it about that experience that solidified writing as your means of expression?
I love seeing the response of the audience to something that I've created.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just hearing their laughter, or people will come up to me and say, "Oh, that really touched me. That story moved me in some way. It reminds me of my mother."
Mm.
So those kinds of reactions motivate me to just continue writing.
And how far back was that? Was that like a year ago, 10 years ago?
We started probably like 20 years ago.
Oh, okay.
And we've been creating films ever since.
Okay. All right. Can you name some of the films that you have done?
Oh, sure. So one of the films, Buddy, is a film about a man who has bought a new home, and the new home comes complete with an AI system that regulates everything from food to temperature, and quickly he learns that Buddy has more control over the home than he does.
Mm. And what other things have you written?
So some of the other things, I've written for a group called QAEF, and I've written some short plays and sketches for them, and a lot of them will come out. We do that around Pride weekend, or Pride Month, and so a lot of queer stories. I think one of the big stories I wrote for them was about two men who meet in a cafe.
Mm-hmm.
One is, let's say, senior,
and
the other is quite young, and they wind up telling each other personal, intimate stories about life and love and what that means to them.
Okay. And you mentioned earlier that you had written a book of poetry, but you didn't tell us what that poetry book is called.
That book is called Unlikely Saviors.
Okay. Well, why did you choose that title?
Because it's basically about a lot of people who are in my life or have been in my life, mm-hmm. who I wouldn't normally think of as people who would come to your rescue.
Mm-hmm.
But these people have saved me in so many different ways, from family to friends.
Okay.
And so it's a really personal tome, and it relates just how you can be saved by people you don't expect to save you.
Got it. Now, you have written several plays that have gotten critical acclaim. Can you tell our listening audience a little bit about those?
Well, the play that's going to be performed on May 25th and 26th is called Freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And that is part of the Playground SF Theaters Festival.
Okay.
This play takes place during the bicentennial of 1976 in Philadelphia.
Uh-huh.
And it's about two adult siblings who have lost their mother a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they find themselves sorting through boxes of her belongings, only to discover a secret mm-hmm. that she has been holding on to all their lives. And this revelation completely alters their view of who their mother was.
Okay, and what was the inspiration or the impetus for writing Freedom?
Well, it started with Playground gives its writer's pool, of which I am a member,
mm-hmm.
A prompt. And the prompt for this particular month was Reclaiming Herstory.
Oh, okay.
And the top six short plays are selected and presented as staged readings on the third Monday of the month. And they feature some really great directors and actors from the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the season, the best six plays of the entire season are chosen and produced as a full off-book play.
Very cool.
And so my book, my play, Freedom, was one of the six chosen for that. And it's another personal story. It's some semi-autobiographical.
Uh-huh.
I came out in 1976 during the bicentennial to my parents and to my family.
Uh-huh.
And it's also about a friendship between a mother and what I call a play sister. So this was my play aunt.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of black families have play aunts and play cousins. This was a play aunt and who was very impactful to my life and to the life of my mother and my family.
Now, when you say a play aunt or play cousin, is it is it not actually an auntie, but someone that you play? Explain that.
So my mother had a really good best friend
mm-hmm.
Named Esther.
Mm-hmm.
And I was introduced to Esther as my aunt, but she was not my mother's biological sister.
Got it.
But they were just so close
mm-hmm.
that she got aunt status.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about Playground itself, because I know a lot of our listeners maybe aren't familiar with that organization.
Sure. Playground has two theaters. One is at Freight and Salvage mm-hmm. in Berkeley, and the other is Potrero Stage here in San Francisco.
Okay.
They have... it's a national theater, so they have Playground LA, Playground New York, as well as Playground Chicago.
Okay. And how did you get involved? Go ahead.
And so they're an incubator for playwrights to create plays and have them performed.
Okay. And how did you get involved with them?
I heard about it through a friend, Christy Lynn Belluni, who mm-hmm. is a playwright, and she suggested I try to get into the writer's pool.
Okay.
So I submitted a play and was accepted into the writer's pool. And what happens once you're in the writer's pool, they give you a prompt
uh-huh.
once a month, and then you have 4 days to write a 10-page play.
Wow, that seems really short.
It is extremely short, and extremely difficult. But it pushes me to uh-huh. To create in a way that I wouldn't normally. I normally kind of sit and fuss over things, and this gets my juices going, and I just want to write. And it's amazing how things just kind of will flow from that.
So when you enter the writer's pool and you're given this challenge and you do it, what sorts of things did you learn as an artist, as a writer, that you got specifically out of being part of this writer's pool? Were there any things that you learned?
Oh, sure. One of the great things about being in the writer's pool is that you get to meet and talk to lots of other writers.
Mm-hmm.
And once a month, the writers will get together and will read each other's plays
mm-hmm.
And provide critique.
Okay.
And that critique I find is really valuable coming from other writers that you respect.
Okay. And what sorts of, what would you say is a common critique that could really help someone who's listening, who's a writer, who, you know, like a pitfall not to fall into?
I would say write what you know.
Okay.
And what you don't know, do your research. And also find a time in the day where you can devote completely to writing.
Okay.
Writing really is about just doing it and not worrying about whether it's going to be perfect or not.
Yes.
And so I would say, yeah, do that. Just keep writing and write as much as you can and share that writing with other folks who you trust.
Okay.
To give honest and good feedback.
All right. Well, once more for our listening audience, when and where for Freedom and where can they get tickets?
Freedom will be performed with 5 other plays at the Potrero Stage, and that's at 1695 18th Street.
Mm-hmm.
And they can get tickets if they go to playground-sf.org.
All right. And if people want to find out more about the writing that you've done or follow you on social media, how would they go about doing that?
Oh, check me out on Facebook. Just look for Stan Stone.
All right. Well, Stan Stone, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This has been great fun, and I really appreciate it.
Ah, all right. Okay, people of Earth, this is your opportunity to go check out Freedom. Where is it again?
Potrero Stage.
Okay.
1695 18th Street.
What days?
May 25th and May 26th.
Excellent. All right, people, go to it.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the keeper of the keys, the countess of the clink, the mistress of Murderer's Row, matron Mama Morton.
Ask any of the chickies in my pen. They'll tell you I'm the biggest mother hen. I love them all and all of them love me. Because the system works, the system called reciprocity. Mama, mama's good to you. There's a lot of favors I'm prepared to do. You do one for mama, she'll do one for you. They say that life is tit for tat, and that's the way I live. Deserve a lot of tact for what I've got to give. Don't you know that this hand washes that one too? When you're good to mama, mama's good to you. If you want my gravy, pepper my ragu, spice it up for mama, she'll get hot for you. When they pass that basket, folks contribute too. You put in for mama, she'll put out for you. The folks atop the ladder are the ones the world adores. So boost me up my ladder, kid, and I'll boost you up yours. Let's all stroke together like the Princeton crew. When you're stroking mama, mama's stroking you. So what's the one conclusion I can bring this number to? When you're good to mama,
Queen Latifah, When You're Good to Mama. That is from the musical soundtrack Chicago. You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. Who's about to touch your mind? Well, y'all know I have a lot of sort of historic obsessions. One of them is the bubonic plague from the 1400s. The other one is the Red Scare, the McCarthy era. And there's another book out about it. And I'm very excited to talk to both of the authors. So without further ado, to talk about the book Witch Hunt, we're going to speak to Dr. Andrea Bayless and Elizabeth Levy. Welcome.
Thank you.
So let's first talk about, how did you two meet and collaborate on this book?
We met actually about 35 years ago, when I had a theater company and Liz came to work with the company as a playwright. So we started writing together a long time ago.
I had already been writing children's books, but doing theater was more fun and, as I said, less money than anything I had ever tried. But I really had a wonderful time and I missed collaborating.
Well, you know, like, people do theater because they love it, because they certainly don't do it for the money.
No, they certainly do not.
Or writing.
That's so. What was it about? So, when did you guys start talking about the McCarthy era, and when did you decide you wanted to write about it?
Well, Andrea had become a history professor, and we talked about the 20th century.
And I became aware that my students really knew nothing about the Cold War or about McCarthyism or really much history about the middle of the 20th century, the political history from that period. And it distressed me that they didn't know anything about it. So when we started writing together again, I just said that I had for a long time been wanting to write about this period because I knew there was so little information.
Mm-hmm. And we both love stories, and there's just so many stories about this period, both about fear and courage.
Yes, there's...
So the combination of Liz having been a children's book writer and my having been a college professor in history, it was a perfect combination.
Excellent, excellent. Now, you're right when it comes to there not being a lot. I have this book called Red Scare, and it's interviews with different people about that period in history, people who were affected by it, people who were on both sides of the political spectrum. But it's out of print.
We used that book as a source and quite a bit, and then we also interviewed many people who we got their names of who were children during the Red Scare, who are about my age now.
So in this... Go ahead.
We wanted to interview children or people who had been children during the Red Scare because we were really interested in this idea of collateral damage, that people were labeled during the Red Scare and named during the Red Scare, but everyone around them also was tainted by that, including their children.
Yes, yes. So were there any stories that emerged that surprised you?
Very much. I think one of for both our favorites was a girl whose father was a scientist. And he eventually was absolved, but he lost his job. Mm-hmm. But right before that, when she was a child in New Jersey, before Roy Cohn and McCarthy came to Fort Mammoth, where her father was doing scientific research, she had written to the J. Edgar Hoover saying she loved Nancy Drew and she thought she'd make a great FBI agent.
And J. Edgar Hoover sent her back a letter explaining that although he was touched to get a poem, girls couldn't be FBI agents.
Aww.
And he sent her a pamphlet about how a girl could be a secretary.
Oh, that's devastating. That is devastating.
It certainly was to her.
And then there were somebody else we interviewed. I love this one where when her mother told her she had to go before the House of Un-American Activities, she thought it was a house she went in as an American and came out as something else. And what we want all our readers to understand is history is happening to you now, just as it happened to these people. It's one of the things Andrea always likes to say.
Is that you don't get to read ahead in history.
Right.
You don't know what's going to happen. So you look back and it's so clear why events happened. Mm-hmm. But in the middle of them, the way we're living in the middle of history today, you don't know what's going to happen next.
So talk a little bit about who is the audience for this book. Is it a very young audience? Because you said you were a children's writer. One of you is a children's writer. One of you is a college professor. How do you address those audiences?
I truly believe, as Marie Sendak, one of my heroes, is that children do know everything.
Mm-hmm.
And you try your best to meet them at the incredible level that they are, of even if they can't articulate, they know who in families is going through something hard. They know a lot. They have the curiosity. So even though I've been writing for children for 50 years, I try to write at the highest level I can of the complexity of life.
And everybody has trouble learning history because you need to know a lot of history in order to learn history.
Right.
If you don't have a context for things happening, they just sort of fly off into space. So we worked really hard to make sure that we had the history of the Red Scare, that we needed to tell the story of the Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
We even needed to talk about a bit about World War II and the atomic bomb. All of those things are the background of the Red Scare. I think one of the joys of working together, and we did a book on Watergate before, and because we'd worked in theater, we came up with the idea that you always want to be a fly on the wall to history.
Mm-hmm.
So the fly became our character, that we could give the context and give the history that you need. But so the fly, who's got eyes that look everywhere, forward and backward, the fly has seen everything, and the fly can describe for the reader that context, what other events are, what's going to happen, because most of the book is direct quotes from people who were living at the time.
Wow. So how long is the book? I'm dying to get my copy.
How long is the book, or how long did it take us to write it?
Both, actually. How long did it take you to write it? But how many pages is it? Because when I think
actually I have it here, but you know, you never think of it when you're rewriting. It's about 230 pages.
Oh, so it's quite extensive.
And I can't tell you how much we both need copy editors and our editor and the wonderful illustrator who worked on it with us. So. And how many times, unfortunately, we had to print it out, because when you change something on your computer, you can make one sentence better, but the whole thing may not flow.
Right. So in writing about the Cold War, what would you say is a piece of it that you found heartening? Like, oh, there's hope for, like, as a fly on the wall, like you said, you have the advantage of having hindsight, which is 2020. But when you're reading it as a history, what emerged as something that even back then you would have said, oh, this is a clue that everything's going to be okay?
I don't think everything is okay, but I was touched by how many people whose families had been caught up. And you do remember there was truly a Cold War. Russia did consider themselves, Andrea can talk a little bit more about what Russia, what the Cold War really was, but then who got caught up on it.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that the world was divided into a communist world and a capitalist world, that division that was so important in the second half of the 20th century, it shaped everything. So many people now don't know about it or don't remember mm-hmm. what an important force it was, and how everybody was felt caught between these two world powers, and that they had to make a decision about it. But the fact that you're right, as you read along, you don't know what's going to happen next.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the sort of essence of history. And most of the people who got caught up in the Red Scare were often teachers, librarians, writers in California, union people,
mm-hmm.
Where you are in Berkeley and San Francisco. And their involvement was not as Russian spies in the Cold War, but really during the Depression, when they really wanted to have change,
mm-hmm.
or they went to parties for a party. Several people think, I think my father went to meet girls. But very rarely were people ashamed of their parents. In fact, they were proud of them.
Ah.
And that's the hope.
Yeah,
that is the hope, and they hope. And many of them felt that they were carrying on a tradition of protecting free speech that their parents had handed to them.
I love that.
We start the book with somebody who wanted to ban Robin Hood because he stole from the rich and gave to the poor, and they wanted to ban all Robin Hood books in Indiana. And our favorite heroes with the green feather cloak, Andrea loves to talk about them.
I do. When we first started working on this book, we knew that books had been banned. But when I started looking at what books had been banned, I was startled to discover that Robin Hood was one of the books that had been banned because it's communistic to get to rob from the rich and give to the poor.
Mm-hmm.
And so a group of students in Indiana who wanted to protect Robin Hood's reputation, I felt that it deserved to be protected,
mm-hmm.
went to a chicken farm nearby, and they gathered up all the chicken feathers that they could find, which was a large number of chicken feathers, and they dyed them green, and they took them to the Indiana State Legislature, and they threw them off the balconies of the legislature to protest Robin Hood being made illegal. And they were afraid because the FBI did come and investigate, but they were still proud of the fact, and there still is a Green Feather Club. That's right. The Green Feather Society is still out there.
What I love about that story is the revelation that even though they were afraid, they still did it because they thought it was important.
Yes. And there are a lot of stories of people who did things because they thought they were important and who were really brave. And that's really, in many ways, why we wrote this book, was to celebrate that bravery.
And to give you hope, as you understand history as complex and sometimes complicated it is, there are many people to admire, and also that nobody's perfect. We really, in that context, we liked explaining that both Truman and Eisenhower hated Joe McCarthy, but in order to prove they were as anti-communist as he did, they sometimes did harm too. And that's the complexity of life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So what kind of response have you gotten from your younger readers?
Well, we're going to a school of fifth graders tomorrow. We've heard many finding it much more interesting than they thought it would be when we handed it to them. The book has only been out a couple of weeks, but I have heard from several people that this is a lot more fun to read than I expected. But we'll know more as we start going to schools, because we really enjoy having the kids act it out for us. We give them scripts to actually be the characters in the book.
Oh, that's nice.
That's one of the things that we felt really strongly about, is that we wanted as much as we could for the book to be the actual people who said things, the actual words, quotes from people from newspapers and from congressional records and from letters and from all kinds of documents that we found that people actually said. These are their real words. We're sure. We know they are the real words, and we have footnotes for all of those words, but they're not all true. People lie.
Sure.
We wrote down the words that people said, but they weren't necessarily the truth when people said them. And we want to point that out, too, that just because people say something, and just because in history we have an actual quote, that doesn't make it true.
Right. Sometimes people, yeah, you're right, people lie, and they lie, and they commit to the lie, so, and sometimes history doesn't catch the lies for a long time.
That's right. And as we just detect the lies, we sort of revise history, and we rewrite it, but it's a constant process.
Okay. So
when we talk about people being critical thinkers, and all of these goals that we have for students, a lot of it is in being able to understand that just because somebody said something, it's not necessarily true.
Right, right. So the book is called Witch Hunt, The Cold War, Joe McCarthy, and the Red Scare. And where can people find this book? Because you say it's only been out a few weeks.
Well, we always hope you'll go to your library, and libraries have been buying it. It's gotten, we're quite proud of its reviews, and we work closely with librarians. But obviously your local bookstore, and if it's not there, you can certainly order it. And anywhere you can get books, you can get the book.
Oh, okay.
But we encourage you to go to your local bookstore.
We have a lot of local bookstores here, so I'm going to take that to heart. And if people want to find out more about Dr. Bayless and Elizabeth Levy, how would they go about following you on social media?
Right. We're neither of us are that good at social media, but you can go to my website, and Andrea's getting one, but ElizabethLevy.com, and there's a way to ask me questions from there, and we do answer. So if you send any questions about the book, and at Macmillan Kids, Macmillan is our publisher. But I think the best way is to go to our website, or at least my website, and Andrea's will be up soon. And you can write us any questions, and we have several things, reviews and things about the book that are on my website.
And you also said you're going to talk to fifth graders tomorrow. So are you doing a school tour of the book?
Yes, we're doing a school visit. It's sort of towards the end of the year. We'll do more in the fall.
We love school visits.
But we love, and we want, you know, I always tell kids, they can be great historians, because I'm sure you find that as an interviewer, people put their guard down when they're talking to kids, so kids can get great quotes from people. And we encourage them to find a small part of history and write it like a script, write like the fly on the wall, because then they'll learn the history to be able to know what the fly knows, and use the quotes that you've gotten from interviewing your friends, somebody in the neighborhood, your parents. Just sliver of history, you can learn a lot. And I have to admit, I'm a very sloppy writer, but I learned how to good grades because I knew how to make my teachers interested in what I was writing.
History is gossip about dead people.
I like
That's
that.
That's really what it is. So the more you remember that and the more you enjoy those gossipy little stories, the more fun history is.
And it sticks with you because it's a story as opposed to just dry facts.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, with that, I want to thank you both, Elizabeth Levy and Dr. Andrea Bayless. I want to thank you both for being on the show. I look forward to getting my copy, and I hope that you guys travel around the country. If you're in San Francisco, I hope you're able to do a school thing
here.
Thank you.
We will. And Berkeley is one of our favorite places.
Yay. All right. So thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, People of Earth, the book is called Witch Hunt, The Cold War, Joe McCarthy, and The Red Scare. Coming up next, we're going to be talking about Coquette's Nouveau.
Although I'm young, I got a job to do. Get the microfilm in the lining of my shoe. Call it a business trip. Gotta hide inside my trench coat and be clever. Paper in a cyanide pill, a Polaroid, a taser in disguise. There's a base on the hill, and the meat fields looks like canvas in November.
A stroke, your sweet compact, your nation is your gun. Your love beats like a broken throat, you send me. One last contact in Red Square, unless I have to run.
Can't trust a soul, secret messenger. Just the rules that lie like circuits in your brain. And a cool 45, the wind is ice and foreign air tastes great.
ICBM,
bang, you're dead.
No one left to worry. Kiss me quick, now I have to hurry.
That's one of my favorite Blondie songs. It's Contact in Red Square from Plastic Letters. You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. You've heard about the Coquettes? Now there's Coquette's Nouveau.
Yes, there is.
And here to talk about it, I'd like to welcome Dan Carcosco. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me, Marilyn.
Also known as DJ Dank.
DJ Dank, yeah.
So tell us about Coquette's Nouveau and how it differs from Coquette's.
Well, basically, you know, I produced the 2020 show, which is the 50th anniversary reunion type show that we did. And then, of course, COVID happened, and that kind of killed our plans to take the Coquette's and try to educate people and do more shows. So when we came back after COVID, we decided to continue on and do some shows, mm-hmm. and that led us finally last year to New York, where we did a sold-out show at Joe's Pub, and it was great success. And we were coming back this year, and we were looking at our show, and number one, we wanted to give homage. We felt like we had done the proper homage to the original Coquette's, mm-hmm. but at this point, it's like in this show, we have Carl with Records doing one of his own songs. We have Matt doing one of his own songs, and Scrumbly brought some other material out from some other shows that he had done that weren't necessarily Coquette's. Mm-hmm. So we decided it was time to rebrand ourselves to give us not only to give respect and our honor the original Coquette's, of course, who we've been saluting, but we also wanted to, you know, create our own space.
Okay.
And our own group.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the original Coquette's, because mm-hmm. I know we're losing them one by one. Didn't one just pass away?
Rumi passed.
Rumi, yes.
And he was I personally didn't have a lot to do with him because he was – back in the day, it was funny. He had legs, let me tell you, because mm-hmm. back then in 2020, they were saying, Rumi's not going to make it. He can't do the show. And, you know, he just passed a few months ago. So he – made it a long time, but no, I didn't have. But he was a major force in the early Coquette's.
Okay, so I know that Scrumbly Coldwin was an original Coquette.
He is, and he's still on the show now, mm-hmm. writing songs and playing the piano.
And Sylvester was a Coquette.
Sylvester was a Coquette. Yes.
Who are some? Are there? How many Coquette's, original Coquette's, are still left with us?
Oh, there are quite a few of them. Pam's around, Tahara's around, Fayetta's around, and Sebastian, who was part of the Coquette's. He's the one that had the movie theater that they originally rented and did the shows. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, we're doing a film retrospective of some of the Coquette's movies in July as a fundraiser because we're going back to New York in October. So we're going to be at the Roxy on July 8th, and Sebastian's going to be our guest star.
Oh, very nice.
And he's going to talk about the Coquette's era. But, you know, there's still quite a few left. Billy Bauer.
Okay.
But, yeah, there's a good dozen or so still left around.
Oh, very good. Very good. Now, for our listening audience who doesn't know necessarily about the Coquette's, just give us a brief
okay,
history.
The Coquette's debuted in 1969. They only went to about 1971. They were led by this gentleman named Hibiscus, mm-hmm. and he was all into movies and drugs and sex, and he created this group of people, and they started doing these midnight shows, or shows before the midnight show at this theater, and they got more and more ornate and bigger and turned into their own. Basically, they would do these big shows that were like homages to classic films, mm-hmm. black and white films that they all loved, all the musicals, all the mm-hmm. Busby Berkeley and all that kind of stuff. And that's where that all started. It grew and grew and grew, and they started doing their own shows. It attracted the East Coast weirdos. So you had Divine showing up and John Waters, mm-hmm. Mink Stole. They all became part of the group. As a matter of fact, when you see the one movie the Coquette's made, Trisha's Wedding, you can see the connection of the two worlds. You can see, like, this is the same world that John Waters inhabited. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it's kind of like those were the East Coast and West Coast. But that went on to the early 70s. Then they kind of retired and did other things. And then there was a revival when I first moved to San Francisco in, I believe, 2012 or 2010. I can't remember which. But it was Pearls Over Shanghai, mm-hmm. which ran at the Hypnodrome forever, mm-hmm. and was a giant, giant hit. And when I went and saw that, it blew me away. It was like, well, this is why I'm in San Francisco. This is San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And so they did quite a few of those shows. And then they lost their space because of gentrification. Mm-hmm. And then when I started doing shows with Bambi Lake a few years ago, we started bringing Scrumbly and some of the old thrill peddlers and Coquette's into the show. And then that just has, you know, grown on its own.
Okay. And so now the new lineup of Coquette's Nouveau,
yes.
Who are they?
Okay. Right now we have, of course, Scrumbly, who was the original, who was our OG Coquette. Mm-hmm. Also, we have Carl Linkhart, who's an amazing artist. Mm-hmm. He performs on his own as Carl with Records, Carl with Band. I think one time time he did Carl with Gong. I mean, it's whatever he, you know, he's always endlessly creative. He was originally a part of the Angels of Light, which was a spinoff of the Cockettes in the early 70s. So in a way, he's OG as well.
Sure.
We're actually doing one of his original songs that he based on the Tennessee Williams play Suddenly Last Summer. And it is going to bring down the house. I'm telling you, every time we do it, the whole crowd, everybody is just waiting for it. It's so good. Mm-hmm. And then after that, of course, you have Bertie Bob Watt, who's been involved with entertainment in San Francisco since the 90s, basically. And then, of course, we have Noah Hayden, who has been with the Thrill Peddlers, a fantastic singer. He helps us coordinate a lot of the stuff, the numbers and stuff like that. He is always good to have on hand. And then Ellie Stokes, who is, I want to talk about, our younger members. She has her own band and is doing her own thing and is fabulous and so talented. And it's just great having the new blood. Just these people who were, because, you know, she came in so excited about the, a lot of people, and especially the younger ones, younger people, they really identify with the Cockettes because they were so rebellious and gender fluid. They created the glitter beard look. If you've ever seen the glitter in the beard, that the Cockettes started that.
Okay.
Before the Cockettes, drag was kind of like guys dressing like ladies. The queen or something. And after the Cockettes, it was craziness. They brought the crazy drag, the all the all
the over the top.
Over the top.
You know, beards, you
know, gender blending. You know, they were doing it way before anybody. There was not even a word for it back then. And then we have Matt Bradko, who is a really talented performer. He has a theatrical background. He has his, he's just did a great one-man show called Kyle Seven Times type show. It was a really funny, fun show. So he's super talented. Steven Satyricon, who I think has been in every Cockettes revival since we had revivals.
Very cool.
Yeah. I kind of call him the eternal I can't find my word yet. Hold on. I'm missing the eternal chorus boy.
Okay.
Because he's always in our chorus and he always does a great job and he has all these numbers to do with dancing and he's great and wonderful. And we're super happy to have him. Bonnie Suval, who also has had a history with the Thrill Peddlers. And she is just such a great performer. She really takes a song and makes it her own.
Yeah,
and
so
I really enjoyed that. And then we have another a person we've added, Erica Richardson, who is a fantastic performer. We met her when we did the last show. She came at the last minute and helped us out with Jaded Lady because it fell through. And she did an amazing job. And then we did the Cockettes in the Park with the Easter, with the Park with the Sisters. And she rocked it out. But before we went to New York, we couldn't use everybody. We had to take a smaller group. So we brought her back in and she just tears up. She brings a level of song level singing that's just really bringing us up to a higher level. She has opera training and stuff like that.
Okay.
So she can sing.
That's amazing.
So that's our troupe. And of course, me, the producer. And yeah, and so we're just going out and having a good time and rehearsing right now. And matter of fact, tonight we're going to be interviewed by a TV crew from Amsterdam for a late night TV show. So I'm hoping to create Cockettes Mania in Amsterdam. And hopefully in a year, I'll be talking to you about raising money to go to Amsterdam.
But, that's very cool. Just,
I feel like representation, in life, you always take the things that are given you as you know, just go ahead and take those gifts and go with them and see where they take you.
So Cockettes Nouveau, is that the name of the show?
No. Cockettes Nouveau, our show is Dirt, Sex, Passion.
Dirt, Sex, Passion. Dirt, Why is it called Passion? Dirt, Sex, Passion?
Well, that comes from one of the Cockettes' famous shows, Pearls Over Shanghai. And there's a song called Shanghai. And in the show, that's kind of like the big rallying call for like the big finale. Dirt, Sex, Passion, ba-dum-ba-dum-bum, Shanghai, you know, it's all that kind of stuff. And so it was, it's just a Cockettes phrase that's quite well known in the, I guess, in the circle. But that was something that Scrumply came up with, and I thought it was a great idea, too. And we're going to be at Oasis again, which is always a great place to do a show. And we're going to be there. You know, usually we do a more of a weekend stint, but this time we're doing a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So it'll be Wednesday, May 29th. Thursday, May 30th, and Friday, May 31st, we are at the 7 p.m. show.
So it's all happening next week.
Not this week, but next week. Next week, the end of the week, and we're just, you know, just right up to June.
And where, how would people get advance tickets, and can people walk up and get tickets?
I believe they can, they can get tickets if they are still at the door, but tickets are still on sale at Eventbrite, or you could go through the website at Oasis, which is sfoasis.com, and they have a calendar section.
Okay.
But yes, you can go to Eventbrite and just filter Cockettes. I'm sure it's going to pop up.
And is this show just playing in San Francisco, or are you taking it on the road?
We're doing three nights here, mm-hmm. and then we are going into rehearsal mode and fundraising mode to get to New York, because Joe's Pub has invited us back on October 6th on a Sunday to do two shows.
Okay.
That's how well we did the first time.
Oh, very nice.
So we're doing two shows. We're super excited about it. And so, yeah, that's, of course, why we're doing the fundraiser with the at the Roxy, just to raise that money to get us there and back.
Very cool. And you talk about how you mentioned how the young people really like mm-hmm. the Cockettes aesthetic.
Yes.
What is it that they add to the Cockettes aesthetic? Here we are, 50 years later.
Energy.
Okay.
Excitement.
Okay.
Their own talent and their own point of view. That's what's always so great about collaborating with a group. You give somebody that material, and then they come back and go, I really like this, but what if I did this? What if I did that?
Ah.
You know, and the thing about our group is it's a very open, Scrumbly is very open to listen to people mm-hmm. and their input, and tries to connect, bring it all together, because, a lot of these songs, they were originally in musicals, and they had plot points in uh-huh. them and stuff.
Okay.
And a lot of those plays, because of the way things are now, don't transfer well as well. So the sure. idea would be to take a lot of these songs out of their original intent and create mm-hmm. a standard on their own. And so we want the people who are performing to bring their own pieces of themselves into it.
And how do I don't even know if you know this. Do you know how the remaining members of the original Cockettes feel about it here, 50 years later with a brand new crew?
I think that, number one, they're extremely proud of the fact that the Cockettes history is going on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's one of the reasons that I want to use the word Cockettes in our title, at least, because that's a word that needs to be continued to be brought out. It needs to go further than just San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to go to Amsterdam. It needs to go to London. It needs to go to Sydney. It needs to go all over the world. We need to educate everybody about the quality of these songs. I mean, some of these songs that Scrumbly and his wordsmiths and compadres have created, they right up there with Irving Berlin or some of the other famous songwriters of that era who had more restraints on how they wrote and what they could write about. So a lot of Scrumbly songs are brilliant, and they sound like they come out of a musical, but a really naughty musical.
Mm-hmm.
You can't tell me Cole Porter wouldn't have wanted to write some stuff like that.
Well, I love his song Midnight in Manhattan.
Oh, Midnight Manhattan is the
beautiful.
Dealio. That is
so
the
beautiful.
Creme de la creme. People in New York went nuts for that. I mean, they went nuts for the Cockettes overall.
Right.
I stood in the back and I watched. People were jumping up and down the aisles during the show.
Uh-huh,
it was
uh-huh.
one of those crazy experiences where it's like, I can't believe this is happening. Because we were worried about New York audiences being all poo-poo, like, oh, you San Francisco.
Right.
We're New York. We're Broadway. No, they loved it. They were afterwards, I was selling T-shirts, and they just came out and were just nonstop talking to me about it, just like – so excited.
And that's a different response than when they went back in the 70s because, when you...
Well, part of the Cockettes legend is they got really popular in San Francisco. Rex Reed from New York, he wrote for Playboy and was mm-hmm. this big critic of the era, loved it, and wrote this whole thing about the amazing Cockettes. So they got funded and went to New York, and the first night they were there, like the creme de la creme of New York society was there, including supposedly Angela Lansbury,
mm-hmm.
and they bombed. Not just a bomb, but a boom. And
because at the time it was like a context, it was taken way out of context.
Oh yeah, exactly. I mean, you talk to the Scrumbly and some of the people of that era, and basically, they were basically met at the airport with drugs and alcohol, and they just partied for all those days. So I think they were kind of hungover, and they just really weren't ready yet. And then, after that disastrous opening night, they went through their whole run and got quite good and got some good reviews.
Oh, okay.
But yes, they had a legendarily bad night.
Oh, okay. But it was just the one.
just the one.
God.
And they have been back several times uh-huh. as the Thrill Peddlers doing Cockette shows mm-hmm. as well. But this was we just used it this time as the Cockettes coming back to conquer.
So that's the cautionary tale of don't do drugs before the show.
After.
And with that, one more time for our listening audience, when, where, what days, and
yes.
where can they get tickets for
the
show?
Cockettes Nouveau in Dirt, Sex, Passion. Musical direction by Scrumbly Coldwyn. And we are going to be at Oasis, which is at 11th and Folsom here in San Francisco. You have to be 21 and over with the photo ID. And it's Wednesday, May 29th, Thursday, May 30th, Friday, May 31st, all at 7 p.m. Tickets are available at Eventbrite or at sfoasis.com.
And if people want to find out more about the show, is there an online presence for it?
Well, we are on Facebook. Mm-hmm. There's a Facebook event page. And of course, we have our Instagram page, which is Coquettes Nouveau.
All right.
One word.
Well, DJ Dank, because that's easier to say. DJ Dank, I want to thank you so much for being
on the
show.
Thank you for having
today.
Me so much. I so enjoy coming here and talking about what's going on in the community, and I'm always so excited to be able to come here and report these things, because one of the things about me to San Francisco is I fell in love with everything about this city and what makes it great, and I love to come here and try to, share that with people.
You know what? We've got one more minute, so don't you do some sort of pot bingo thing?
I do. I'm doing bongo bingo every second and fourth Saturday of the month. Really good news. I just got signed to, at Pride this year. There's going to be the very first cannabis usage space in the Civic Center area.
Okay.
Hot box with a couple of X's on there. Okay. And I'm going to be the official DJ and MC for both nights.
Very cool.
Both days there. And we're going to do bongo bingo there as well. But yes, I do drag cannabis bingo at Mission Cannabis Club every second and fourth Saturday of the month. It's $15 to get in. You get your bingo card, and you go in, you play, and we give cannabis prizes away.
All right.
And have a good time, and we have a little drag, some fun, mocktails, So it's always a good time if you are a cannabis aficionado of any age. We get there was a person there celebrating their 21st birthday, and then there are other people there that are retired and loving it. So it hits all people.
All right. Well, DJ Dank, thank you for being on the show today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Okay, people of Earth, it's just about time for me to switch up the music for you. Mr. Ford won't be in today, so I'll be putting on some music that will make you think he's here. In the meantime, I'll see y'all next week. Until then, ta-ta and toodly-doo.
You know, kids, I wish every mom and dad would make a speech to their teenagers and say, kids, be free, be whatever you are, do whatever you want to do. Just so long as you don't hurt anybody. And remember, kids, I am your friend. I would just like to say that it is my conviction that longer hair and other flamboyant affectations of appearance are nothing more than the male's emergence from his dress.